Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Keys to Effective Embedded Software Development, Supporting Tools and Processes. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers, Jen Chitty from Sierra Wireless and Mark Brown from Gramatech. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of presentation, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, let's run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A, and if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. A reminder that this and all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Our speakers today are Jen Chitty and Mark Brown. Jen is the principal IoT evangelist with Sierra Wireless. He is also architect of the Legato open source embedded application framework. He has over 23 years of embedded development experience in such diverse fields as telecommunications, distributed systems, building automation controls, and robotics. Mark Brown is the chief marketing officer at Gramatech. Mark brings more than 25 years of technology leadership experience in his role. Before joining Gramatech, Mark was Group Vice President of Product and Solutions Marketing at Polycom, where he helped define and market Polycom's workplace of the future. Prior to Polycom, Mark spent several years supporting the embedded software markets with Intel, Wind River, and IBM leading several market teams. Earlier in his career, Mark was a software engineer with Motorola, Corning Research, and GE Aerospace. Welcome. Jen will be starting things off today. Jen, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Kurt. So with the continuous increase in performance and reduction in cost and size and power consumption of ICs with both analog and digital circuits, and of course network interfaces, more and more exciting embedded computing ideas are becoming practical with every passing day. Of course, the field of embedded computing is huge. It ranges from tiny PIC microcontrollers and home audio video remote controls all the way to high-performance systems embedded in military equipment and industrial systems that are capable of tasks like real-time image reconstruction or recognition and 3D modeling. Somewhere in the lower middle of this performance spectrum lies the vast majority of the Internet of Things devices. These devices tend to be less powerful than general-purpose computing devices like smartphones and tablets, but they're powerful enough to run a full-featured operating system like Linux. This space is currently experiencing a gold rush, so everyone and their dog is trying to strike it rich. Most of them are missing the mark, but many companies are finding success. Unfortunately, like in any gold rush, safety is lower priority than getting rich quick, and this is creating another gold mine for the bad guys in the dark underbellies of the tech world. The good news is that there are tools and techniques available to help get products to market fast while still managing the security risks. Probably one of the greatest enablers of the Internet of Things explosion these days is the availability of low-cost, off-the-shelf development platforms. And these are cheap enough for any hobbyist to afford. In fact, some are so cheap that tinkerers have been known to pay out of their own pockets to buy several devices with no particular project in mind, just to have them on hand in case of an unplanned flash of inspiration. Now, these platforms come with plenty of sensor, actuator, and network interfacing options, both wired and wireless, either available on board or through inexpensive third-party add-ons. And they're not just hardware kits. They come with software and development tools pre-integrated and community-based support systems in place, so free help is often just a quick Google search away. Some of these platforms are even based on open hardware. This means that the hardware designs are available for download and can be customized and manufactured without paying a fee to the original creators. This breaks down even more barriers to product development. Two notable examples are the Arduino and the Mango. But whether you need to customize the hardware or not, you'll at least need to customize the software. And in the Internet of Things space, the expected level of functionality is high enough that it's not practical to build all the software yourself. And this is where the power of open source software comes into play. There are so many powerful, feature-rich, stable open source packages available today that we're starting to take them for granted. And many of them have been in use in commercial products for over a decade now, meaning that they've been commercially validated and field-tested by millions of users. There's no doubt that open source software provides a massive development jumpstart, but it's not a walk in the park. I mean, it's definitely better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick, but sometimes it can still feel like a poke in the eye with a blunt stick. Integrating lots of open source packages together with a working kernel and drivers on your hardware platform can still be a challenge. And even when you've accomplished that, you still have to build your own IoT application. And it's only when you start building your own IoT application that you actually start creating your product's own differentiating value. So really, you want to get to that stage as quickly as possible. A very significant project that's been gaining popularity in the embedded Linux world over the past few years is Linux Foundation's Yocto project. When we first started building Legato Linux based on Yocto 3 years ago, this project was still relatively unknown. It has been gaining popularity rapidly since then, though, but most people still don't know what it is, so I'll provide a quick introduction. In the past, SoC vendors needed to provide a working Linux distribution for their chips before they could sell into certain markets. Each chipset vendor tended to roll their own distro, but this was not their core competency. And once chips were sold, there was little incentive for them to actively maintain their Linux distributions unless their customers were paying for it or overpaying for it. And the result was that the Linux distro you got was often out of date and contained many known bugs and security holes. Minimal QA had been performed on your drivers and packages, and you would end up having to maintain your copy of the distribution yourself. So eventually, the SoC vendors and various Linux product and service organizations grew wiser and came together to form the Yocto project under the umbrella of the Linux Foundation. Now the chipset vendors all contribute resources toward a common goal, and everyone reaps the benefits. The Yocto project ports and validates a huge collection of user space packages and kernels on x86, x86-64, ARM, MIPS, and PowerPC architectures. And you now have a choice of several tested mainline kernel versions to use with any given version of Yocto. And you have the option to use a long-term supported kernel, for which critical fixes are backported by the Linux Foundation for years. So you don't have to worry about porting your drivers to a new kernel or backporting critical fixes yourself every few months to stay safe from newly discovered security holes. But even with the Yocto project, there's still board support work that needs to be done. For example, the mainline kernel doesn't necessarily have drivers for all the peripherals that you've picked. And Yocto won't have software packages to support all markets. For example, Yocto doesn't yet support all the latest embedded cellular modem features. This is where Legato Linux comes in. It's an embedded Linux distribution tailored to run on Sierra Wireless's Linux-capable WP series smart cellular modem modules, with modem features and security features enabled and drivers tested. This gives you a cost-effective, open platform for IoT development with internet connectivity via 2G, 3G, and 4G cellular. And Legato Linux also includes the Legato Application Framework. Legato Application Framework provides tools for building, troubleshooting, and deploying secure embedded applications into the field. It provides all kinds of tools that are purpose-built for embedded systems. For example, it provides tools for packaging embedded software for delivery to fleets of remote devices in the field. So this is a push style of update as opposed to the pull style commonly seen with desktop package management systems, because you don't want to have to remotely log into every one of your 100,000 devices and run apt-get to update the software. It's also designed to be robust against interruption, so power failure doesn't leave your device in a bad state. And if broken software is pushed to a device, the framework can automatically roll back to the previous known good version. The Legato framework also allows you to specify how the device should autonomously recover if one of your programs crashes or uses too much RAM. And it provides all kinds of APIs typically needed in embedded systems, like deterministic memory pools, timers, fast-linked lists, and hash tables. And it adds features on top of standard POSIX threads, like the ability to see what threads are waiting on what mutexes or semaphores. So it's easier to troubleshoot your devices when they're in the field. And it's totally free, open source software that, unlike many software projects, is documented, commented, and written with readability in mind. An interesting feature of the Legato framework is that it provides a mechanism that allows programs written in one programming language to provide function call APIs to programs written in another language. For example, a Java program can use functions implemented by a C program, or a C program can call functions implemented by a Java program, even if those programs are running in different sandboxes. This addresses another trend in embedded computing, that is, the trend toward using higher-level languages. But these higher-level languages tend to run slower and consume more power than those written in C or C++. So unless your device is connected to mains power and you have money to burn on overpowered CPUs, then even if you plan on using Java or Python in your final product, you're likely to have some part of your system that needs to be written in C or C++. Allowing systems to be built using multiple programming languages allows you to rapidly develop using the language that gets you there the quickest and then optimize the parts that need to be optimized without having to rewrite everything. It also allows you to make use of software written by others in their language or languages of choice while allowing you to do your development in your language of choice. Typically, when a program written in a high-level language needs to talk to programs written in other languages, some kind of inter-process communication mechanism is needed. Often, network sockets are used for this, but that creates a lot of overhead as messages have to pass all the way down the protocol stack and back up again just to reach another process on the same host. And network sockets can also be very difficult to secure. Unix domain sockets offer a lighter weight option that also offers built-in privacy, authentication, and access control mechanisms to those who know how to use them. But even if you're using secure IPC connection, you still have to overcome the problems of buffer allocation, message field marshaling, byte packing, queuing, dispatching messages to appropriate functions for processing, routing responses back to the right client, and matching received responses to the outbound request messages that they're associated with. Not to mention designing a protocol that isn't susceptible to deadlocks. This is where Legato's code generation tools come into play. The main goal of these tools is to dramatically reduce the amount of boring, repetitive boilerplate code that you have to write. And not having to write boilerplate code doesn't just save you time writing the time required to write the code, it also saves you the time required to test the code and the hassles of having to debug the code. The other main goal of these tools is to increase the reusability of your code by generating things like process startup code, IPC code, and event handling code. Your code gets decoupled from the code around it. So when you reuse your code in another situation, the code generation tools generate different glue code for you. And of course, another major advantage of the code generation is that you're not prone to recreating the same buffer overrun bugs and other security hole bugs that when you're re-implementing the same thing over and over again. The Legato code generation tools can also generate configuration settings for the untarget runtime system. So for example, you can specify limits on how much RAM and CPU an app is allowed to use. You can also specify what IPC services are allowed to be used by what apps. And the target device and what the target device should do to recover if your app crashes. The code generation tools take care of the encoding of all this and more as instructions to the sandbox system and builds you a package that contains those settings along with your executable binaries ready for delivery to your target. This leaves you free from having to worry about how to implement all these security features and fault recovery features and software update features and allows you to focus on adding your own unique value. So with recent high-profile hacks showing extreme vulnerabilities in everyday embedded systems such as cars and household alarm systems, the general public is becoming aware that their trust in these systems is just blind trust and that the industry has not been paying nearly enough attention to security. this is pushing embedded device vendors to pay more attention to security, but things still seem to be moving very slowly on that front. Security remains a generally poorly understood topic, and most developers barely even think about it before shipping product, let alone spend a significant amount of time and money trying to manage the security risks inherent in their products. And older connected products are even worse. Many of them weren't even designed to be field updated, so security holes in those products can't be fixed, even if someone were willing to spend the time and money to fix them. As a result, there are vulnerable systems all around us. Most people don't really pay much attention to that fact, but the hackers are becoming very aware of the opportunities, and government spy agencies and the so-called dark web's commercial hacking industry have taken notice and begun targeting network embedded systems. Unfortunately, the only way to be absolutely certain that a network device is safe from hacking is to smash it with a hammer. But it is possible to manage the risk such that it becomes highly impractical for a hacker to do significant damage. A key approach to reducing risk is implementing the policy of least privilege. This means that a running process can only access what it needs to access and no more. In this way, if a process is hacked, the damage that can be done is limited to only what the process would be allowed to access when it is functioning normally. Legato supports this through the careful application of standard Linux security tools like control groups, rlimits, chroot, unprivileged user accounts, bind mounts, conventional discretionary access control, and mandatory access control. In Legato, by default, apps run in a sandbox. A special privilege process called the supervisor creates the sandbox when the app starts. Supervisor also monitors the process inside the sandbox, and if they crash, the supervisor can take corrective action, such as restarting the process, restarting the whole app, or stopping the app. Also, when the app is stopped, the supervisor cleans up the app sandbox. Each application can run multiple processes if it needs to. Also worthy of mentioning is the Legato sandboxing system is designed to allow you to sandbox any kind of program, whether it was written using C, C++, Java, Python, shell scripts, or even if it was provided to you as a precompiled binary executable. Limits can be placed on apps at build time, and the sandbox system enforces those built limits at runtime, so you can protect apps from each other in the field. Each sandbox has its own root file system, separate from the host device's actual root file system. In this diagram, the file systems are shown as cylinders. The larger one outside the sandbox is the host's root file system. The smaller one inside the sandbox is the sandbox root file system, which is visible to the application processes running inside the sandbox. Only what the sandbox app needs is made available inside the sandbox's file system. Things from outside the sandbox can be made accessible inside the sandbox. For example, in the diagram we see that the serial port at /dev/ttys0 in the host file system is being made accessible by the application running inside the sandbox. This is done automatically by the supervisor when it sets up the sandbox. But in keeping with the principle of least privilege, this is only done if access was explicitly granted to the app at build time. As I said before, Legato implements sandboxes through the careful application of standard Linux security tools like control groups, rlimits, chroot, etc. This stuff can be tricky to configure correctly, though. And if you do it wrong, you're just creating a false sense of security. But Legato makes configuration of all this easy. You specify the permissions you want, and the Legato framework on the target makes sure it happens. I strongly encourage you to take the time to learn how all these Linux security features work and to learn about the many other security threats that lie out there in the Internet of Things. And remember that the only way to make a device totally safe from hackers is to destroy it or to not build it in the first place. But assuming that you want to build an IoT device anyway, Legato can help by providing several layers of defense against many types of attack with minimal effort required on your part. So in summary, Legato Linux running on a Sierra Wireless WP series smart cellular modem as part of the Mango open hardware platform allows you to rapidly develop sophisticated IoT applications that can make use of the global cellular network, thereby helping you take part in the IoT gold rush without compromising your security or the security of your customers. Thanks, and back to you, Kurt.
Great. Thank you very much, Jen. Our next speaker is Mark Brown. He's going to be talking with us about effective software development and improving security, safety, and quality. Mark.
Thank you, Kurt. And good morning and good afternoon, everybody. Jen, thank you for kicking us off this morning. As mentioned, I want to spend just 20 minutes or so talking about very effective approaches to improve your software development. I think that, Jen had mentioned a number of concerns and risks that you guys are all dealing with today and certainly going to be dealing with going into the future. I really want to just kick it off and provide a baseline of what's going on in the market today. I think that everyone would agree that IoT is a great paradigm for connecting sensors to gateways, to servers in the cloud, to improve multiple systems. But with that, it really has blossomed and really exploded the number of types of devices that are being developed, that are being powered by software. And again, these touch on a variety of areas, from wearables to mobile apps to smart devices, cyber-physical devices that are really being leveraged and utilized in our infrastructure and manufacturing, all the way up to big data and what powers big data. Really, all that information is flowing from these sensors and these systems up so that people can use it for remote diagnostics, use it for broader analysis and remote updates and so on. So software really is completely powering today's advanced IoT systems, and it really is the underpinning. It's the foundation for how these devices are going to operate and provide that value. But at the same time, software is also the Achilles heel for today's IoT vertical market devices. Software itself has a number of risks, right? Software recalls are up 100% since 2003. Software defects and software vulnerabilities are the number one cause today. And interestingly, if you look at a lot of applications and a lot of devices, it's amazing how costly software development is, or the percent of capital expenses these days. I think there was a recent study that talked about how software made up more than 25% of the capital costs of today's automobiles. And it's amazing to think that that software element, which is this small hidden zeros and ones, is costing more than a quarter of the vehicle. And it's the same in many of the vertical areas, right? It really is one of the primary investment areas, and it's also the primary area that's creating additional costs for organizations, because it's the number one defective area, and it's driving recalls. Defect rates are actually accelerating, not actually reducing. And cybersecurity risks are increasing exponentially. And this is the thing that I know Jen mentioned, the way to solve this is with a hammer. But again, I think there's a lot of things that organizations need to think about, because cybersecurity is so incredibly costly. I was reading a report yesterday. I was actually shocked. The most expensive software hack or cybersecurity attack has now cost $38.5 billion. Via the MyDoom cyber attack, which was a basic worm that would take control of systems. So it can be very, very dramatic. And again, there's lots of examples out there. Toyota spent $6.5 billion fixing defective software in the Prius, and the list goes on and on and on. There's almost daily and weekly news articles about very critical issues that are being basically found because of software issues. Now, if we think about the overall landscape of embedded and IoT systems, there's a number of reasons why these complexities and challenges have become so daunting for manufacturers. And it's primarily because there's not one particular area that's causing them issues. It's multiple dimensions they're dealing with. Most manufacturers today dealing with software for devices are dealing with new customer demands, All of us love to have things connected 24/7, getting our information flowing to our mobile devices or powering our smart homes, being connected in our automobiles. But all of these new customer demands are putting more functionality in devices that have to be thought about upfront via their designs. Are they secure? Are they safe? Is the quality and the resiliency going to be at levels that are going to be acceptable by the consumers as well? Additionally, we've got lots of new technologies. Jen talked a lot about these. We've got new technologies that really span the gamut, right? Many people are looking at using multi-core processors, and these are both homogeneous and heterogeneous devices. Many people are trying to leverage, in fact, heterogeneous devices by leveraging CPUs and GPUs and having that mixed combination of software and software accelerators. We've got new environmental threats. Many things are really coming to play here. Probably the biggest thing is the fact that many of these IoT devices are being plugged into the public internet, which is not only connecting them to the greater IoT ecosystem, but it's also opening up the door to cyber attacks, cyber threats, and cyber criminals and nation-state attacks. We've also got organizations who need to learn new guidelines and regulations. How do you effectively create a connected device in a secure way that also has safety requirements and quality needs? And then lastly, you've got to think about new business liabilities and risks. You know, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, by doing something maybe at 90%, you're exposing your company to a very significant business liability that may not be planned in. And again, if you've, you know, got a device that's popular, that's sent out and then found to be somehow unsafe or insecure, and it allows people access to information, that could create a very, very big business liability to your organization. So thinking about all of these things up front and really trying to break away from what I've coined security complacency is very critical. Now, with all of that doom and gloom, there are a lot of opportunities for people to think about. First and foremost, with complexity really comes the opportunity for people that can get their hands around it, a great way to drive competitive advantage. So if your team is developing IoT-enabled software and you've got great ideas and great innovation that you can get to market more quickly than your competitors, and you can prove that it's secure, that it's safe, that it has the quality, you're going to have a winning strategy. For those people that incrementally evolve and maybe they don't have a good sound plan of how to validate their software, they're most likely going to have particular issues and recalls that are going to occur, and again, that's most likely going to be a losing strategy. Now, from Granitech's perspective, the best way to get started is thinking about your development process. And again, this webinar today is about how organizations can improve software development. And I think probably one of the most important keys to effective software development is to relook at your software development process. Most organizations have got older processes that have been in place for multiple years, in some cases multiple decades, that have evolved very slowly, and they're primarily focused on design validation around functionality. They, in many cases, regardless if they're agile-based, they are somewhat serialized, where they're doing a design, they're doing some implementation, they're doing some testing, and that could be done very, very iteratively or through Scrum. But at the end of the day, they may be missing some of the most important attributes up front. And our recommendation is that people need to rethink their development process. They need to learn new functional and safety and security best practices and guidelines. But most importantly, they need to design that process with a security-first philosophy. Systems that are insecure will never be safe and most likely will not be reliable. And you may get lucky for a long period of time, but at some point, a college student, a DARPA-funded researcher, or a cyber criminal is going to attack and break into your application. Now, the best way to actually gain insights in this area through the development process is to perform regular threat assessments. This is a great way for you to get indications of your overall system's resiliency and to make sure that you don't have any obvious security vulnerabilities that could be exploited by malware or other types of attacks. You also need to think about how you integrate automation and more development validation tools into your process, throughout the process. It should be something that's not just a QA's responsibility, but designers, testers, QA people, and security auditors all need to be thinking about what can we do to add in automation and tools that can help us gain early insights, potential issues. The next thing people need to think about is what process do you have in place to ensure that your supply chain, your software supply chain, is not actually bringing in those same weaknesses in malware that you're trying to prevent in your own code. This is a very big blind spot for most organizations today. I think many organizations feel handicapped that they're getting binaries and libraries from vendors. And that could be something as simple as a semiconductor provided firmware or a semiconductor provided optimization library set for a processor. It could be middleware that you're buying that you don't want to write, database libraries, maybe graphical libraries. But it's definitely software that you're going to be integrating into your application that if it has a vulnerability, your system has a vulnerability. And then last but not least, don't ship until all the quality and security audits have passed. You know, don't race to market knowing that you've got a market opportunity that you want to get into, because the downside risk of actually being attacked is going to certainly outweigh the early market benefits. Now, how do you do this? Gramatech is a company that's been in business for a long period of time now. We're in year 26. We've been focused on software assurance, software hardening. And again, what we want to make sure that people think about is how do you look at your software very, very much in a pragmatic way, get the necessary analysis done so that you've got confidence that your software doesn't have any sophisticated issues or obvious defects. And again, there's lots of ways to do this. There's lots of tools that can help automate the software analysis, whether it's using static techniques or dynamic techniques. There's lots of ways to get indications of potential issues. We've got great static analysis technology that helps organizations automate the analysis of both binary and source code. And this will help organizations in multiple ways. One, it'll give organizations deeper analysis across their code base, including their supply chain code base. Unlike testing, static analysis has one unique benefit, and it's not based on test case development. So, you know, you really need to think about having static analysis and testing and other types of things like fuzzing all brought into your development process. The static analysis is great in the fact that it just analyzes your binaries and your source code separately or together in mixed mode analysis to give you insights on potential warnings, defects, and vulnerabilities that you may have. The other thing is it's very easy to integrate. Static analysis is something you can integrate anytime during the development process. If you're through a project or if you're halfway through, if you're beginning a project, it doesn't matter. It's very, very easy to integrate with practically no changes whatsoever. It just ties into your build system and you're off and running and you're getting insights. The third thing is it gives you very quick indications of third-party risks. If you've got software that's being offshored, if you've got vendors that are providing software, you need to have something in place to validate that what you're getting from them doesn't have malware or doesn't have defects that could be used for attacks. And then all the other things, right? I mean, these particular benefits of automating this analysis is going to help you catch bugs earlier, and we all know catching things earlier is beneficial. It's certainly going to cost you less to fix. It's going to help you get a better indication of code quality based on the number of warnings that exist, and it's certainly going to help you reduce time to market. through the fact that you're going to be delivering something that's not going to be recalled because of problems that people are going to be exploiting. Now, it's critical to think about the fact that not all tools are created equal. There are different types of static analysis tools for different types of purposes. And there's a fairly broad spectrum here. You've got lint-like tools that are really good at looking at basic coding standards and API checks. And on the other end, you've got verification tools that are really good to verify your hardware and your software together, really much like driving, your actual system on the hardware that you're going to deploy. But in the middle, there are very sophisticated static analysis tools now that have been developed and evolved over the last several years that focus on very sophisticated issues that your systems are going to be dealing with. Number one, many IoT systems now are based on multi-core processors. Multi-threading and concurrency is prevalent across the market. These are some of the toughest defects to find because even through rigorous testing, where you might test all your lines of code through formal MCDC testing, you still may not find a concurrency issue because it may need one specific, environmental setup to find. And many of these concurrency issues are found post-market when they're deployed. And we've seen issues come up with safety-certified software that's been deployed where something random has come up. And the vendors come to us and say, hey, can you guys find something here? And we've been able to find some deadlock or race conditions. So these are really critical things that static analysis tools and CodeSonar in particular is really, really good at. Additionally, really doing the analysis on hazardous information flow or tainted data analysis is going to be critical. Given the world of IoT is about connectivity and passing information from sensors to gateways up through servers and into the cloud, it's critical for you to validate that both formed and malformed information coming into and out of your device will not have a particular exposure for you. Many times people will find that they can attack a device by sending it malformed information that'll either open up and provide information back, much like most of us saw with the Heartbleed virus or other types of attacks. So CodeSonar helps you really look at the information through very, very detailed tainted data analysis. And, there's lots and lots of value here. I mean, the big thing that I always recommend to people is think about your multi-threading complexities, think about your tainted data, think about your binary libraries, and then, yes, make sure that people are complying with APIs and best practices and all the other things that static analysis is good at as part of a code review process. Now, the good news for many of you guys out there who are looking for tools, Granitech has been actively evolving and investing in software assurance and static analysis technology for many, many years. In fact, there's been multiple independent studies done, and in fact, one here where there was over 170 tools being looked at that Granitech's CodeSonar was ranked number one for static analysis. And this was really because of the breadth and the sophistication of these issues today. You know, you really need to think about your memory issues or potential issues, memory overruns, memory underruns. Concurrency is becoming much more of a tier one problem today with the broad adoption of multi-core. I've talked a lot about the importance of binary analysis. You can't underscore this, right? Teams who are not validating their libraries, and again, if you're developing in a Microsoft environment, you are linking against Microsoft DLLs. If you're basically linking against a Linux environment or other types of operating systems, you're most likely linking against libraries that you did not write. You may not have a good sense of how well they've been verified from a security perspective, and you may want those indications. You want to make sure that, your analysis is being looked at and so on. So all of these dimensions really help Granitech's CodeSonar rank number one. A very broad study, and there's been many studies done in the markets today. Now, I think the unique things that really drives CodeSonar to help people improve their overall development methodology and really help them output great quality code is through all of these various dimensions. Now, I've talked a lot about these a few things that I haven't talked about. In the IoT space, more and more software that's being developed is being deployed in regulated marketplaces. Today, if you were to jump on a commercial airliner, or you are on many of the transportation systems, rail, you're basically in a device that's got safety certified software. We are finding that more and more software is being deployed into other types of devices where governments are starting to raise their heads and say, you know what, these systems can also have very dramatic impacts if failures occur. Think about all the new advanced ADAS and, you know, autonomous driving vehicle systems that we see now in the automotive marketplace. From a consumer, I love them, right? Having a car that's got an autopilot feature where I can just kick back and relax and talk to the people in the car and maybe be a little bit more productive and just count on the car getting me from A to B would be fantastic. More and more cyber-physical devices that are being used in automation require that same level of, you know, analysis and certification. And then the medical field, right? More and more robotic instruments are being used for high-precision surgeries where you really need to have tools and capabilities to help you through that safety certification process. And again, this is another critical area that you need to be thinking about when selecting automation tools for development process, making sure that you've got ones that are going to support all of the requirements that you're going to be meeting maybe today or in the future. And most organizations, I think, realize that as we keep moving forward into the future, more and more software is going to be regulated just because of the potential impact it can have on people and businesses. So this is something for all of you guys to think about. You know, I think it's a very critical element. Now, selecting the right partner is also critical. I think the very unique thing with Grammatech is the fact that over the last 26 years, we've been involved with very advanced cybersecurity research that really spans a number of areas. The research that we've been focused on started with software assurance areas, you know, helping teams develop software accurately, really helping them identify and remediate defects. And that's really led to a whole host of more advanced types of research in this area, a lot of very advanced research around anticipating malware evolution. And this really looks at what types of attack vectors and attack techniques are people going to be using. And again, the more we get involved in that, it's interesting because a software engineer versus a cyber attacker think very differently. They, you know, one's very functional and the other one is all about non-functional things. How can I get in very creative ideas? So we're very involved in looking at advanced research that will help evolve and advance these techniques as well as the tools that we deliver to all of you guys in the marketplace. The other thing is just our participation in other areas, right? You know, the fact that we've got great expertise to help people who may be lacking software security expertise. Certainly we can help mentor and train organizations, provide assessments using our technology, but also some of our years of experience in understanding things that they may want to do or need to do to improve their software quality and really lower their overall risk. I think the other thing is just other things we've been involved with. I think one of the most fun things that Grammatech is involved with today is the DARPA Cyber Grand Challenge. And for many of you guys on the line today, I think you guys are aware that DARPA sponsors a number of grand challenges over the last several years. They did one on autonomous driving about a decade ago that really led to many of the software advances we see in automobiles today, from autonomous vehicles like the Google autonomous vehicles that are driving around California to many of the ADAS systems. They also had a grand challenge on robotics about 4 years ago, and the current one they got is the DARPA Cyber Grand Challenge, which is focused on fully autonomous software systems that can self-protect, and these are systems that can analyze software applications. They can transform those applications dynamically without human intervention to make them more resilient to cyber attack. They can detect when cyber attacks are occurring and then take action on those things to really make sure that a particular application's mission is maintained regardless of the types of attacks that are occurring. And really, this type of technology is critical because it's going to be critical in the IoT space to deal with zero-day attacks that are very, very problematic today with most intrusion detection platforms that are available. So we're excited. You know, we really are trying to advance the technology in multiple ways, not just help people find defects, but give them strategies for also fixing them. And we believe that is probably the most important thing to help people develop good, resilient, high-quality software. So with that, let me just wrap up my section today. You know, I always enjoy these webinars and connecting with all of you. I think, you know, for me to summarize, IoT device risks and threats are growing rapidly. This is not a shocker, and it's not any big news for all of you guys. But it is something that teams need to be thinking about more seriously. You know, there's always this business conundrum that we see as we go out and talk to organizations where engineering teams are very concerned about things, and management's also concerned, but they're also concerned about their quarterly profits, right? So there's this tension between shipping fast, shipping on time, versus making sure that everything is done to really minimize cyber attacks and threats. This is where, you know, Gramatech can come in and help you guys. We can help accelerate those issues so the engineering team has confidence, but you still help you guys get out on time. Cybersecurity inexperience is really one of the biggest issues we see in the marketplace today. More and more systems want to participate in the Internet of Things, and they're adding, you know, various connections, whether it's Bluetooth or Internet connections, without really understanding the ramifications or risks. So this is an area that we get back to evolving your process, understanding new best practices, and really going and getting the necessary tools to help you mitigate those things up front. There's a huge overlap between quality, safety, and security. You know, our assertion is that you're never going to have good quality or safety if you're insecure. You're never going to have, you know, safety if you've got poor quality. So these three dimensions going hand in hand, and you really need to solve them together. But you really need to think about going after things with a security mindset first, and then think about the functional and quality and safety elements second, just because without being secure, you have no idea, right, what could happen, right? Someone could take control of your device. They could actually change the firmware by gaining access, take control. So there's a lot of other things that could happen there. The other thing, finding defects and vulnerabilities manually through really detailed code reviews is simply not practical today. There's too much software. You know, I know that when I was a software engineer many, many moons ago, Kurt mentioned back in my GE Aerospace days, you know, software applications were a lot smaller. Today, it's pretty common for even some of the simplest devices to have thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of lines of code. So you need really good automation tools to get these things done. And advanced static analysis can help you, and it's a great way for you guys to improve your software development process. And really improve your ability to ship good quality, secure software. So with that, Kurt, I'll turn it back to you.
Great. Thanks a bunch, Mark. We are now to the Q&A portion of the event. We had a lot of good questions, and the audience can continue to ask questions as we go through them. Let's start with one for Jen. There's a question about Python engine availability for Legato. Is it available?
Yeah, so Python is available inside the Legato Linux distribution. Python 2.7 is there, but we haven't built the integration with our code generation tools just yet. That's underway as we speak. We just finished off Java. And so yes and no, I guess, is the answer. But certainly any language that you want to add, you can do so. It's a matter of just copying the required virtual machine or binaries onto the target because it is an embedded Linux system that supported. It's a mainline kernel. There's nothing extra special in that regard.
Okay, great. Mark, there's a question about, you talked a lot about security aspects and different kinds of attack vectors. What do you see as the best way for teams to increase their knowledge for security issues just to kind of get started and become and raise awareness?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it really starts with, one, understanding some of the new best practice guidelines in your particular market. You know, if you're in the medical market, there's lots of great information available from the FDA or other certification bodies. It really starts there, doing your homework and understanding best practices and guidelines. From there, it's really reevaluating your development process, and you know, almost always it's going to be looking at your validation steps. And there's a lot of great information out there about the benefits of static analysis, fuzzing, testing. You know, we always recommend people look at all three of these things. And if you're doing two of three, you're not doing enough. You really need to think about static and dynamic analysis and fuzzing to ensure that you've got that broad coverage. Some people may feel that it's too much, but in today's world with all the threats, it's fairly easy to do with the level of automation and tools available.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Jen, what do I need to do to load and run the Legato Linux and 2G, 3G cellular on the Sierra wireless platforms? Do they need to grab a SIM card and get a wireless plan to do some testing, or are there other options available?
Yeah, well, if you do want to use 2G or 3G cellular, then you would need a SIM card and a wireless plan for that. But you can do your development without that. You can start with other network interfaces such as a USB or a Ethernet connection as well.
Okay. All right, great. Let's see. There's a question about it's a kind of an interesting dimension. So this person agrees that the regular security assessments are key to keeping a secure system. And Mark, you talked a lot about Sonar and being able to kind of identify that in the code. What about the IT aspects? Do IT people need to stay on top of computer issues in their respective companies? How does that relate to the IoT, and how does that extend IT departments' responsibilities to start, you know, worrying about vulnerabilities in these embedded products?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real broad spectrum of issues. I mean, frankly, the IT people have got a number of dimensions they need to think about. Certainly, they need to, you know, be vigilant about their overall network and the security of that network. You know, whatever they're doing today with firewalls and gateways to connect, you know, their internal systems and devices and sensors and remote employees, that's critical. But we are seeing, honestly, more people in the IT organization that have concerns about evaluating new applications they're thinking about deploying before they deploy and analyzing them to see if those applications do contain any malware that could be hidden, just given the fact that, you know, organizations developing enterprise software are using open source. They're using third-party software like I talked about. You know, that software in some cases is a little unknown maybe where it was developed. You know, parts of it could be developed all over the globe in risky areas, so people need to be diligent about that. And then I do know that organizations who have application stores with apps have the same concerns. They really want to build an ecosystem of apps, but they want to make sure that the apps that are being placed on their app stores are actually, you know, not bringing threats to their customers. So analyzing them through binary analysis while also doing all the necessary network security things are going to become more of the commonplace going forward.
Okay. Jen, about the Legato system, do they have to run everything in a sandbox, or are there other options?
There are other options. You don't have to run your code in a sandbox. We definitely encourage people to run everything in a sandbox because it is safer that way. But perhaps if you want to do some rapid development and then switch it to a sandbox later, you can do that as well, just to save your permissions configuration until a later time and get focused on your functionality. But certainly I would encourage not shipping with your applications running outside of a sandbox. Certainly, you can switch back and forth, though, as you go, quite easily. It's a one-liner in a config file.
Okay, great. Mark, you mentioned tainted data, and part of that was checking for invalid data or data that may cause the machine to error, like boundary conditions and such, I would assume. Are there other aspects? You mentioned something about remote control and maybe even, you know, illegal downloading of the firmware and those kinds of things. What encompasses the tainted data that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, the critical thing is really just doing full taint analysis of your system. In many cases, a particular data flow may be very complex, but static analysis provides the ability for organizations to look at all of their various control flows within their application and system, and it will visually highlight those that could potentially be at risk based on hazardous information flow. And this is one of the primary ways that cyber attacks occur, and there's many examples. I mean, even the recent Chrysler Uconnect issue that we saw, which was a DARPA-funded research grant to see if people could hack into an automobile and actually do damage. What was interesting there was you had two systems that were interacting via a CAN bus. One system was somewhat exploitable via the data that was coming out of the CAN bus because they were expecting data on the CAN bus to be valid. But the researchers found that by doing various things through the infotainment system, they could get invalid data and actually rewrite firmware in a key control area and then control a Jeep from a couch. So this is why tainted data analysis is so critical, just making sure that data coming into your system is fully verified and that you've got the right checks inside of your application to really deal with malformed information.
Okay. Great. One last question for you, Jen. Very quickly, there was a question about an array of sensor-connected XB radios, and they wanted to know if they could use the MangOH Green Plus serial communications to connect it to one of the radios in the sensor grid to kind of start making an IoT application. Maybe you won't be able to answer this right away, but maybe you can just kind of provide an overview and get back with them.
Yeah, certainly. The Mango Green platform has a lot of different interfaces available, including UART, SPI, I2C, SDIO, and all of these things can be made accessible quite easily because the board is really kind of like a development board with all the interfaces exposed. Also, if you feel like doing some hardware development, you can build a little IoT expansion board which can slot into the expander slot on the IoT on the Mango board, which is this is an open standard slot that has been developed in conjunction with the likes of TI and Freescale and Linear. And essentially, it provides you access to all of those interfaces I mentioned before. And then you can actually provide your board to other third parties if you wanted to allow them to develop using your platform.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of today's eCast. I want to thank Jen and Mark for sharing their insights on effective software development tools and processes. We at Open Systems Media, Sierra Wireless, and Gramatech want to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing excellent questions today. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. Again, we want to remind you that Open Systems Media events are copyrighted, and they may not be recorded without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.